Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering Kingston City Council's decision to investigate the feasibility of expanding roundabout usage in the region.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Really, I just didn't want to keep going around and around in circles on this issue, so I'm just looking for more.
That's out of order.
That's out of order. That's a dad joke. I have five kids.
That was Councillor Ryan Boehm speaking at Tuesday night's council meeting as he introduced a motion seeking more information about how the city decides when and where to build roundabouts. Last month, council approved the first major roundabout in Councillor Boehm's district in Kingston's East End to be built at a cost of $3 million. That decision came in place of installing traffic signals, which would have cost $1 million. Now, Councillor Boehm is asking for a deeper look into whether more roundabouts could be feasible around the city. His motion notes that roundabouts are becoming increasingly common in other municipalities as an alternative to traffic signals. They offer several potential benefits, including improved traffic flow, reduced emissions, slower vehicle speeds, and fewer severe collisions, contributing to both safety and sustainability goals. However, the motion also acknowledges challenges. Roundabouts require more space than traditional intersections, which can impact construction costs, property acquisition, and the surrounding area. With unanimous support from council, city staff have now been directed to prepare a report by early 2026, detailing the city's traffic control policies and outlining how roundabouts are evaluated for new and reconstructed intersections.
Short story long. Essentially, this is just looking for more information. Roundabouts definitely do have their place. We don't seem to be building a lot of them, so it was just in a conversation with staff of like to try to figure out like where that holdup may be. Is it a planning thing? Is it a money thing? Basically, it's more just trying to get more information. It does sound like going forward, we're probably going to start to see more of them in appropriate places, but this was more just to try to sort of understand from top, from beginning to end, how that whole evaluation process works. Obviously, we see them popping up in many places around us, but kind of want to understand how and when and why, and hopefully we will see more of them being built here. So that's as simple as it is. It's just looking for more information on that.
For CFRC News, this has been Christina Laurie, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about a possible change to Greater Napanee's cross-border cell phone policy.
Thank you, Jesse. When a cell phone or computer contains sensitive government documents, it can be a significant concern, even at the municipal level, if that device is carried across the border into the United States, particularly in light of the broad authority given to U.S. border officers to inspect electronic devices. A U.S. cross-border policy report was released prior to the June 11th Greater Napanee Town Council meeting. The report recommends the implementation of a cross-border cell phone policy that would prohibit town-owned devices that store town data from crossing the U.S. border. The provincial government's Municipal Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act mandates that municipalities protect personal and sensitive information under their custody and control. This responsibility extends to situations where electronic devices containing such information are taken across the border. The report notes that evolving procedures at U.S. borders have introduced considerations regarding the privacy and security of electronic devices carried by travelers. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers have the legal authority to inspect electronic devices without a warrant. They can access and review the contents of phones, laptops, and other file storage to enforce laws and protect border security. Locking the device, putting it on airplane mode, and turning off facial recognition may not even be enough because U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials have software to copy the data from the device. As such, the Canadian government has updated its travel advice to remind Canadians of U.S. border officers' significant discretion when deciding who enters their country, including the power to inspect phones and laptops. The report notes that the updated advice emphasizes the need for travelers to expect device inspections and be prepared for additional questions. Using a temporary phone, encrypting data, and minimizing the amount of sensitive information stored on devices can help protect privacy during cross-border travel. Napanee Town Council staff recommends that the U.S. cross-border cell phone policy prohibit town-owned devices that store town data from crossing the U.S. border to safeguard sensitive municipal data, reduce legal and reputational risks, and ensure compliance with privacy and security standards. This policy applies to all employees and members of the Council of the Town of Greater Napanee who travel to the U.S. for any reason. In the report, IT staff propose that the town engage in a loan program by which council members or town employees traveling to the U.S. must trade their town phone for a temporary phone that will hold their SIM card. The report also recommends that council and employees reduce the amount of sensitive information stored on their devices before traveling. The report states that implementing this policy will require allocating resources to provide temporary phones and IT support, but the costs can be covered within the existing IT budget and equipment. Thank you to Michelle Dory-Forestell for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGAI reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, with an update on the construction of a private school in the Gananoque area.
Thank you, Dinah. A private school in Gananoque has cleared a major hurdle as council approved a revised development permit, paving the way for expanded childcare and early education services at 250 Wilson Drive. The decision allows for the construction of a 1,723-square-foot accessory building on the property to accommodate a private school for up to 30 children, subject to several conditions including compliance with Ontario Building Code and Ministry of Education requirements. The property had been previously approved in 2024 to operate as a day nursery under home occupation provisions, with before and after school care offered in a proposed accessory structure on the north side of the lot. The modified plan includes moving the new building to the south side to make room for a fenced play area and parking lot, while increasing the maximum number of children permitted from the original application. Council's approval was conditional on a final scaled site plan that reflected several design changes: an increased front yard setback, relocated garbage enclosure to the side or rear of the property, depressed curbing near the accessible parking space, and exterior vinyl siding that complements the existing dwelling. The owner must enter into a developmental permit agreement within 1 year of the decision for the approval to remain valid. All costs associated with meeting these conditions are to be covered by the owner. Council members voiced strong support for the project, emphasizing its role in supporting working families and enhancing educational options in Gananoque.
And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to the LJAI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a report about the increase in emergency response calls in the region and the impact it has had on municipal budgeting.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. According to their 2024 annual report presented this week, Loyalist Township Emergency Services responded to a total of 542 calls for service in 2024. This included a total of 65 fires, resulting in just over $2 million of loss. Fire Chief Kent Reedman noted an approximate percentage of accident calls that come from the 401.
When I look at the stats from from last year. It's about around 100 calls were car accidents or motor vehicle collisions, exactly 100 out of our calls. So that accounts for about 18.5% of our calls are car accidents. Out of that, I don't have the specifics on the 401, which I can get, and it's probably a good number to actually keep track of. But I would just a rough guess, we're going to look at probably at least 75%, give or take, of our calls, of our motor vehicle collisions would be on the 401. So a significant amount. So you're probably looking at last year, give or take 75 calls on the 401.
Councillor Paul Proderick spoke about the time spent on the 401.
The chief and I talked last night, and I was really intrigued by how much time is spent on 401 calls. I think people need to realize how much of, you know, our time is spent on the major highway.
Reedman provided council with statistics and general information on a variety of operational and division-specific aspects of their team in 2024. They welcomed Reedman as their new fire chief last year, along with two deputy fire chiefs. Just under 6,500 hours of training were delivered to staff in 2024. They counted a total of 29 more service calls in 2024 than in 2023, representing a 5.35% increase. The Amherst View Station responded to the most calls in 2024, being the primary response area for 225 calls. Reedman spoke about the breakdown of their annual report.
It's based on just the average of the municipality. We could separate the more urban areas out. It does create some significant differences within that reporting structure. It definitely can be done. It was just done as an average over the entire township.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over now to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about Fashion Week in Picton.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
That's the excited behind-the-scenes sounds of the models getting ready to strut their stuff down the main walkway of the Picton's Armory for the first fashion show of the day. The weather was perfect for the outdoor show, and the later indoor show was sold out. This is the very first Fashion Week for Picton, sponsored by the members of the Business Improvement Association and Modell Modeling and Talent Agency from Belleville. It is the largest production in 34 years for the agency, who supplied professional models of all ages and types, demonstrating fashions from many of the retailers on Main Street in Picton. The shows were the highlight of a week full of events and collaborations with wineries, the Regent Theatre, Department of Illumination, and all merchants on Main Street. I spoke with organizers and business owners about the event. Mark Rose is the Executive Director of the Business Improvement Association. I'm down in Picton for the first ever fashion show in Picton. Can you tell me something about that, Mark?
Yes, we are hosting two fashion shows today. The first one is 1:30 p.m. outside at the Armory, and the second one is inside the Armory in a perfect little natural runway space we have, or the Armory has. So 1:30 and 5:30 shows, you know, this is an idea that the BIA has had for a couple of years. We have enough great fashion retailers on the street where we thought we could pull something like this off. So this week culminates today with these two fashion shows, but it's been a great week on the street of activation, sales, lots of good energy, and that kind of thing.
Organizers Crystal Campbell and Kelly Somerville tell us more.
What can you tell me about the whole week?
Picton Fashion Week has been amazing. It's been really great to see our community come together, all the businesses on Main Street. It's just been great. It's been busy. It's a busy
Very
one.
Very busy.
So we're just gearing up for the big event happening
right now.
So.
And Kelly, you have a business here. What are your thoughts?
I'm elated. I'm just so excited. I think to Crystal's point, the community coming together to showcase what really Picton is. We've got all these little local independent businesses, fashion all over the place, and we thought, you know what, let's start to showcase this.
Yeah, it's really great to have community support as well. Just the buzz on the street is really great. We're so fortunate to have Modell from Belleville producing the show for us. It's the largest show to date that they have produced. So and two separate shows, one outside the Armory at Armory Square, and then the sold-out evening show inside.
And do you think you'll try this again next year?
Absolutely. We're already 100%. Planning for next year.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. And what other events have been going on this week?
Oh, we've had some sip style. Shop and strut sidewalk style. Sidewalk sale shopping.
Was late night on Friday night, which was last night, which was fantastic.
So wine tastings, yeah. Art gallery shows, there's been all kinds of things
Department
happening.
Department of Illumination has joined in, the fun.
We did a really fun kids workshop. That must have been probably my favorite event that happened all week.
Kicked off
they got
week.
To do a little runway walk. City Revival sponsored Clueless, the movie at the Regent Theater, everyone dressed up. So yeah, it's been a really great week and we're really looking forward to next year.
Yes.
Thank you.
But bigger and better.
Bigger and better.
If we could be. Could we be?
We can be.
We can be.
We can be.
Thank you, ladies. I'm speaking with Alexandra from Magpie Fashions. Hi, Alexandra. How are you today?
We're very well, thank you. Very excited about Fashion Week.
Can you tell me a little bit about that, how it got started and why and what's happening?
It was the inspiration of a few members of the BIA board, Crystal from Crows and Nicole from Casey's Closet and Kelly Somerville from October Sky thought that now that there was a mass of clothing stores in downtown Picton that we could perhaps showcase them a little bit. And they conceived this idea of Fashion Week. And this is the first one, so we're learning as we go, but there's been a lot of excitement around it. And we're looking forward to introducing people to the incredible array of clothing that we have here in Main Street Picton.
And tell me about the fashion show. I understand there's a fashion show tomorrow.
Yes, all the stores that have anything to do with fashion are involved in providing items from kids' clothes, from Meadows Babies and Kids, to Fat Face and Merchant for Men, and all of the ladies' clothing stores are providing outfits for models from the model agency in Belleville, and they'll be strutting their stuff twice tomorrow on Saturday, one at 1:30 in the outside of the Armory Mall, which is free to everybody, and then there's a second show in the evening inside at 5:30, which they're selling tickets for.
I believe it's been sold out, though.
I understand that it is sold out, which is exciting.
Yes.
So next year, maybe the Regent, who knows?
Yes, Picton. Picton, I don't think was like this before, so it's evolving.
Yeah, the energy on Main Street is really good at the moment. You know, I've been a merchant here for 25 years, and I have to say that it's really nice to see the street coming together and working together to do things outside the box. You know, outside your traditional, you know, sale event, to highlight all of the different things that Main Street has to offer. So it's very exciting.
It is. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about changes to Port Hope's waterfront parking permit process.
Changes are coming to parking in Cobourg as residents are complaining about summer parking permits on the waterfront. The town offers a $40 season pass for the beach and harbor area. However, Jordy Nash claims the town wants $150 for a second vehicle pass. He addressed Cobourg Council's Community Protection and Economic Development Committee Tuesday, stating it's unfair to charge so much for a second parking pass. Nash said when he inquired about the second pass, staff told him parking is a privilege.
Why not offer a supplemental $40 pass? I'd be willing to pay $40. It may even exceed what we would spend buying hourly parking. It just bothered me so much that this pass was explained as a privilege, yet it doesn't really fit the needs of our family.
Nash explained that his wife, a cancer survivor, attends the waterfront on Monday and Wednesday evenings for fitness and dragon boat classes with other survivors. While taking one vehicle, on occasions he and their son attend in their second vehicle. Nash stated the additional exorbitant cost for the additional pass is prohibitive for residents. Mayor Lucas Cleveland said changes are coming to parking. He stated a report is due before the council soon. Yet Town Clerk Brent Larmer said families should be allowed to park two vehicles at the waterfront. He cited beach volleyball leagues where two vehicles are sometimes used.
We have a lot of volleyball leagues that happen down at the beach area too as well. And sometimes kids, you know, a parent is going there to do recreation activity and the other one is having their kids at a hockey or a baseball tournament, but they're coming back down to watch their parents, so they have two vehicles on there.
Larmer explained that the town is considering weekend visitor parking permits with online payment options. No timeline was given as to when the report would come before council. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, June 12th, a daytime high of 22 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud dropping down to 11 overnight. Moving towards Father's Day weekend, Friday, June 13th, daytime high of 21 degrees, a mix of sun and cloud going back down to 11 overnight. Saturday, June 14th, a high of 19 with cloudy conditions. Sunday, June 15th, staying consistent in that 18 to 20 degree range with a 40% chance of precipitation. Monday, June 16th, going to be a beautiful day here in the city of Kingston, daytime high of 22, and it's going to be beautiful and sunny. Tuesday, June 15th, more sunny weather in the forecast, daytime high of 23 with a mix of sun and cloud. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Public Services and Procurement Canada wishes to advise the public that the LaSalle Causeway will be fully closed to vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians to allow for the temporary opening of the main marine navigation channel during the following periods. For the summer, the dates of closure are June 8th, June 15th, June 22nd, June 29th, July 1st, 6th, 13th, 20th, 27th, August 3rd, 10th, 17th, 24th, and 31st, and September 7th. It will be closed 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on each of those summer dates. The fall closure dates are September 21st, October 5th, 14th, and 19th, and November 2nd and 16th, and the causeway will be closed from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. on those dates. Now for this week's relevant road closures. Albert Street, Princess to Mac, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Earl, is closed until June 11th for paving operations. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Cassidy Street, Montreal to Maple, is closed until June 20th as part of the ongoing intersection improvements of Montreal and John Counter. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Lakeshore Boulevard, front to Joreen, closed until June 13th to rehabilitate the existing sanitary system. Pine Street, Division 2 Cherry, closed June 9th from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. for sewer relining. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria, closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett, is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Wortman Avenue, Lakeshore to Lakeland Point, is closed until June 13th to rehabilitate the existing sanitary system.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.